Richard Murdoch wins a pair of Tea Party endorsements. How significant are they? The first debate in the race for mayor of Indianapolis. The governor talks liability caps and begins his Indiana book tour. That plus what Mitt Romney told an Indiana Republican and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 30, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, GOP Senate candidate Richard Murdoch picked up a national endorsement to go along with a local endorsement handed out 5 days earlier. The Tea Party Express gave Murdoch a donation of $2,500 along with a promise of volunteer support. Murdoch is challenging longtime Republican incumbent Dick Lugar, and the Tea Party believes that Lugar is no longer conservative enough.
He thinks he knows better than we the people. We don't think he is in representing the people anymore, but representing his own self-interest. He's big government.
It's an outside group coming in from California trying to tell Hoosier voters what to say and what to do and what to think.
Will the Tea Party be a deciding factor in the Senate primary? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at the Franklin College Statehouse Bureau, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, should Dick Lugar be concerned?
I don't think he should be concerned. I think Dick Lugar's running exactly the kind of campaign that they want to run. They're on top of it. They're raising money. They're doing the stuff in the field they need to do. They are monitoring polling data every single day. They're calling virtually thousands of people a week to see if there's any movement on this thing. So they're doing what they need to do. And the Tea Party, as we've said on here before, is a very loose confederation of small groups all over the state of Indiana. And they're not always exactly on the same page, as was evidenced that day. I mean, they met in Greenfield at the announcement you referenced, and there was also
the state folks met in Greenfield
in Hamilton County, an hour difference in time. But to me, the shocking thing was the money. $2,500 was not a lot of money. I thought, you know, if they're going to come for some money, they'd come for some huge amount. And I think money is the big difference in this race. Murdoch's not raising it very well, and Lugar is going to have a huge advantage, which translates into television points.
Today's a fundraising deadline. We're not going to know the numbers for a couple of weeks probably, but we're going to find that out here pretty soon. Democrats are getting their hopes up because the Tea Party Express has been involved in four U.S. Senate races, and their candidate has won the primary in each case.
That's right. And he's clearly the Tea Party darling. He's trying to take this and make it into a national race, and that's what he's saying. This is a national race here. And, of course, Senator Lugar wants this as an international race, and Joe Donnelly just wants to be the senator from Indiana. So it's there's kind of a sharp contrast among the three of them. But Lugar obviously has
there's
a great...
There's some wishful thinking involved in that.
Well,
right?
It depends on what happens. You know, the Tea Party activists are, they do vote, and they have had clout in Indiana elections before. I think he has to get to a threshold, he being Murdoch, has to get to a threshold of fundraising in order to be competitive. The $2,500 isn't going to put him over the top.
No.
But if national money starts pouring in here, that's a different story.
I thought it was interesting. The Lugar campaign reacted by rolling out an endorsement that they received from former Secretary of State George Shultz. I mean, if you ever wanted a day where you could say that one guy is the insurgent candidate and one guy is the establishment candidate, that would be the day.
Yeah, but that's not a big surprise. I mean, it does clearly show the contrast, Jim, and I think that goes back to your original point, which was, is the Tea Party going to be a factor? And Richard Murdoch better hope that it's going to be a factor because he has no chance otherwise. The money is going to be a big differential. Senator Lugar is going to have a large advantage, and you can anticipate that they'll spend that money probably pretty well. So He's going to need feet on the ground. He's going to need activated voters, and he's going to have that, or he's not going to have a chance.
But this isn't about Murdoch. The woman who you just heard from, Amy Kramer from Atlanta, Georgia, answered question after question after question and couldn't say why she supported Murdoch. She only talked about why she opposes Lugar.
Well, the Tea Party folks, a lot of those folks are frustrated with Senator Lugar. They think he's not conservative enough for them. I think that any candidate who would have acted conservative, spoken in a conservative way, and looked somewhat credible, the Tea Party folks probably would have endorsed. They do not want Senator Lugar to be reelected. But I do think it's important what Mike pointed out, which is that the Tea Party is a very loose coalition, and they're kind of an independent type of group. I'm not sure these are the kind of people who are going to vote for someone just because someone tells them to do it.
Well, you know, to say conservative, Richard Lugar's conservative, okay? Richard Murdoch is to the right of Attila the Hun. I mean, we're not talking, he's saying there's too much bipartisanship in Washington. I don't know what planet he's on. So, I mean, you've got all of that. The question is, does the money advantage alone? I mean, it reminds me in some ways of the original Ballard Peterson campaign. You know, if the feeling is that Richard Lugar's been there too long, it doesn't matter how much money you spend. They're going to know he's been in public service for 50 years. I mean, that's half a century. And that's a pretty powerful message to some of these people.
The governor had it right. Dick Lugar's an icon in this state, and he's going to show that on Election Day. I think you missed the idea of the Schultz endorsement was a reference to the Reagan.
Oh, I know. He issued a statement, and he said that Richard Lugar reminds him of Ronald Reagan.
Well, but you got to remember that Lugar voted with Reagan more than any other member of the United States Senate, and you're sending a message to the Tea Party folks who revere Ronald Reagan that this is a Reagan cabinet official endorsing Dick Lugar.
But you got to get past the fact that it's a former cabinet official to get there, right?
Yep. And you've got to wonder of how many of the Tea Party people, I mean, how certainly of the younger members of the Tea Party know who Ronald Reagan was.
Well, a lot of Tea Party members know who Ronald Reagan
was. A lot of the older ones
I can tell you what,
do.
What the political advisor for the Tea Party Express who was on hand for this announcement used to work for Ronald Reagan.
Well, yeah. He knows him. Okay, great. Good. I'm sure he was persuaded not to vote for Murdoch.
Indianapolis mayoral candidates Melina Kennedy and Greg Ballard met in their first debate this week. It was an unusual arrangement for a debate held in front of the downtown Rotary Club. The candidates were seated, reading from folders on occasion. Kennedy briefly lost her place. But the Democrat needed no prompting when she got the opportunity to address the crime issue.
And I'm proud to have earned the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police, who dropped their endorsement of my opponent.
It's a message echoed in a new Kennedy campaign ad.
Local police dropped their endorsement of Ballard. Forbes calls us one of the 10 most dangerous cities in America.
The Republican mayor tried to minimize the loss of what was his most important endorsement 4 years ago.
As far as the FOP endorsement, we have been raising the standards in the police department. And the police know that, and most of them appreciate that fact. And if it costs me a political endorsement to raise the standards in the police department, so be it.
There were no knockout punches and no major gaffes, but by the end of the debate, Kennedy appeared more confident. And Eleni, how much will debates matter in this race?
Well, I think the debate that you're moderating will be a very, very important one myself. I think they have some. You're welcome.
What
free plug.
Mine,
Channel 8.
Man?
Oh, I forgot
October
about yours,
October 23rd.
John. I'm sorry.
The 5th.
Okay, October 5th, October 23rd. They'll be very important. Very important. I think that if there are mistakes made, probably in a debate forum, they can come back to haunt the candidates. They have a part to play in it. Are they deciding factors in it? Probably not. But obviously, Melina Kennedy seems very mayoral in that. She's in control. She has marshaled the facts. She knows what she's doing. Greg Ballard's very defensive in this, and he keeps trying to blame the Peterson administration. And he's been, as you always say with Obama, has been in here 3 years. Your guy's been in here 4 years, and yet everything that's wrong, the 36,000 jobs lost,
did
the crime rate and everything else is somebody else's fault. So I think he has a problem.
Ballard, on 6 or 7 occasions in that debate, asked for an opportunity to rebut. He seems defensive.
Well, when you're being attacked every day like he is on television, what they have, that's all I've done from the start of this campaign, it's easy to be that way. But to answer your original question, until the debates are on television where people are watching, very few people are going to pay attention. It's your classic of a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, right. Did it really make a sound? Well, these debates so far have not made any sound as far as resonating with the public is concerned. And now the ones that are going to be on at the end of the middle and the end of October that are on TV, then the profile goes up dramatically. And that's when I think you'll see people start to pay a little more attention to them as you get closer to Election Day. But as far as what I saw this, both of them stuck to their notes. Everybody stuck to their talking points, and nobody made any real mistakes. So it's all pretty much status quo.
I think the real question out of the piece that you just showed is not whether the debate mattered, but whether this FOP issue matters. And I do think that makes a difference. I've heard people who don't generally follow these kind of issues talking about the ads involving the FOP. And I do think that it is not, it's not much of an, I mean, it's a great advantage from Lena Kennedy and a problem for Ballard that he lost that endorsement. I don't think that looks good for him.
And she's going to play it up. In the meantime, we talked last week about the efforts to rename Georgia Street and the kickback that the pushback that the mayor was getting today.
Excuse me, kickback.
He meant pushback.
Pushback is what I meant. today he announced that he's going to put that on hold, but says that they'll honor 30 Hoosier heroes on Georgia Street, and he's not comfortable with having the street named after another state. Has he handled this well?
I think this has been a lingering problem. This should have been a one-page, one-day story, but it's been dragged out for weeks now. And the mayor tried to say that this was a political kickback, but the reality—I'm sorry, pushback. But the reality is that this has been something that's been brewing for the last 6 weeks since it was announced that there was this competition to rename the street.
Without telling people the street was going to be.
And the purpose for this, today was the first time that they'd mentioned this monument park in the midst of all of this. And so I think that the answer to your question, the short answer is yes. And I think that they need to get on top of these little, what seem like little issues, they need to get on top of them so they don't become bigger issues.
Because these are things that everybody understands.
Well, it's very simple to understand. You either think it's a good idea or a bad idea. And if there's a lot of noise around it, then it hurts the incumbent.
And it's either an open process where everybody can put suggestions in, or they already have a preconceived notion of what they want to do with it. But it reminds me a lot of that the business with the not-for-profit tax, where they put this idea out thinking they're going to get good press, and then they say, whoops, I didn't realize this, 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 and this. So backfill after the fact. You know, he ought to be focusing on jobs, crime, and education. He should not be focusing on the naming of a downtown street that goes for two blocks.
Care to rebut?
Indianapolis Downtown Inc. was the one that started the idea of changing the name to connect the new convention center expansion with Conseco Fieldhouse and the new area in between. And I, for one, think it ought to be changed. I think it's goofy to call it Georgia Street when you have those two world-class facilities there and what they're going to do there. And eventually, I think, and as far as input, public input, that's what they started this. They asked for people to submit names. So
they're going to take a job of explaining.
They're going to take a break from this. They're going to let it be out there, let people see it, and then they'll decide whether they're going to change it. I, for one, hope they do.
And in the meantime, find out if he gets reelected.
That's the triggering point. He says, if I get reelected, I'll name it whatever I want.
Governor Mitch Daniels said this week that he is open to lifting the $5 million state liability cap in order to compensate victims of the state fair tragedy that killed seven and injured dozens more. A federal lawsuit challenging the cap was filed this week. Is there a circumstance where you think that might be raised with regard to the state fair tragedy?
It's possible. It's up to the legislature to decide where an appropriate cap level is, and I'd be open to that. But I think we have to be a little careful. Everybody's heart goes out, of course, and that's why we put a private relief fund together, and that's why we said you don't have to sue. The state will just put its money out there. You don't have to wait 2 or 3 years, maybe get zero, or if you get something, a lawyer gets a third of it. We want to help all we can.
John Katzenberger, is that position a surprise?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a surprise. I mean, he's pretty clear here. He's saying to the legislature, all right, we need to consider this, and we need to do what's right by the victims of the accident. So, it's a surprise in that at this point in time, he's come right out and very forcefully said that this is something that should be considered.
Which, and it's something that, State Representative Ed Delaney asked the Speaker to consider with early hearings, and those comments from the governor came 2 days after the House Speaker said, no, it can wait until the session and maybe until the next session.
I don't see it waiting until the next session. I mean, I see it waiting until the 2012 session. I don't see them doing something about it in November. I think they're going to want to discuss it more than that. And so I see them doing it 2012. I don't think it'll be put off till 2013. I think it is will be a fairly easy thing for the legislature to do. The biggest concern that they're going to have to face is the precedent that they're setting in terms of future events. They have to decide whether they want to raise this cap on an ongoing basis for all future liabilities, or if they want to do it just in this one case.
Well, I don't think they can do it in just in the one case. I don't think you can pass a specific piece of legislation, but you can do it. It seems to me,
as my good friend Mike Smith, the former reporter, used to say, they manage to do almost anything they want.
Well, that's true. The question is whether it's constitutional or not.
But that's what it's a different constitution, I suppose, but in Minnesota they did that with the bridge collapse.
Yeah, it's a different constitution. I mean, you can do it, it seems to me. You can do it going forward for, you know, events where there are fatalities in excess of X or Y or Z, but I don't think you can pass something specifically for this event after the fact.
The governor says he's worried that if they raise the cap before they...
I saw that. He's worried about the insurance
companies. A bailout for insurance companies.
And I thought he was a Republican. That's what his function is to bail out the insurance companies. That's what he's done all his career, for crying out loud. I was shocked by that comment.
Yeah, actually,
anti-business.
There seems to be some logic to that.
I think you just said he did the right thing, didn't you?
I don't think you're going to have a determination
of liability
based on that.
I mean, I'm trying to help you say what you really meant was he did the right thing.
But I think
I know
on
that's
this,
hard for you to do.
I think on this, what he needs to do is raise the cap. You're going to have a determination. He's already had a admission of liability by putting the $5 million in the
table.
Right,
which is essentially what he said there.
Right.
And he said we need to be careful and cautious about what we do here. And it's the same thing that Speaker Bosma said. I still believe that it's going to be 2013 before they do anything. I've said that on here repeatedly because I think they're going to wait until they hear what everybody else does with this thing.
Get the investigation
results. That's right. And
the
timing is such that you can't get it done before the 2012 session. I just don't think it'll be done by then.
If it is,
then it's the legislature's prerogative to change it, and they might, but I think that's a long shot.
You can get it done, and you can put the possibilities out there so that these people aren't waiting sometime after 2013 to make up the income that they've
they'll
lost
take
at the
that
state's
long for
invitation
these,
to come.
They'll take that long for these cases to go
Not
through the process.
Not if you're using
anyway.
The moderator like he
Moving
suggests.
On. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the state liability cap be lifted? Your choices are A, only for the state fair victims, B, for all circumstances, or C, no. Last week's question was, will the GOP nomination for president be settled prior to the Indiana May primary? 41% said yes, 33% said no, 26% said I hope not. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mitch Daniels began the Indiana portion of his book tour this week. The governor's book, Keeping the Republic, spells out his prescription for solving the debt crisis. He told me he hopes one or more presidential candidates will pick up on his ideas, but he hasn't endorsed any of them yet.
So let me ask the crass political question there.
You?
Me? It's a living. You know, there are a lot of folks who are saying that maybe this is your resume being offered for vice presidential position.
Man.
But without the endorsement there, some people are going to look at this and say you're trying to hold your options open.
Oh, look. Again, think about the chronology. I first write the outline almost 2 years ago. Book sells in the summer of 2010. I write it in the fall weekends, mainly winter weekends. No, it has nothing to do with where politics is today. It's just what it is. It's one person's attempt to say that the land we love's got some real problems.
Leslie Weidenbender, does this appear to be a successful book tour?
I think so. He's been in the news nationally. He's gotten a lot of attention for some of the things he said. He does have people talking about whether he could be a vice presidential nominee, vice presidential candidate. So, I think it does everything he could have hoped and his supporters could have hoped and more.
Did you expect that he'd be doing book signings at Walmarts and county seats in Indiana?
You know, the only reason was because I saw that they were coming through. I am a little surprised that he's doing that, but it's in character. I got to give him that because this is exactly the kind of thing that he did when he was running for office both times. And he likes to do this. And so, you know, it doesn't surprise me when I think about it in that light. And I'm sure he'll sell a fair number of books out there.
I'll bet you he will be more comfortable doing those Walmart stops than he has been in some of his bigger,
than at the National Press Club? You think he likes Walmart better than the National Press Club?
Maybe not the National Press Club, but he does. But I think he'll do really well there. I think he will.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You buy the book yet?
No, I haven't bought the book. But it is a successful book tour for him. There's no question about it. He's been on every show out there. Where that takes him, I don't know, but it's a successful tour.
I asked him if there would be another book. He said it's possible. This looks like it's a positive experience. You expect that?
I think that's very possible. This has been very successful. After 4 days of sale, he was 26th on the New York Times nonfiction list, and after that was pretty good. After 4 days, today they had to turn people away in Richmond because the line was so big, and he was headed from there to Muncie, which is why they had to leave early. So he's getting big crowds in state and out of state. I bought 6 copies of it at the Minneapolis airport to pass out at a board meeting I was attending a week ago, and boy, the people loved them that I gave them to, so I'm already getting notes back. It's very popular.
You know, the one thing about it is I think it has served a purpose as a blueprint, too, and it does have a political life, I think, and I won't be surprised if some candidate doesn't endorse these ideas in large part, if not in whole, and it becomes a part of the discussion going forward.
All right, speaking of presidential candidates, Mitt Romney was in Indianapolis a week ago, and a Daniel supporter wanted to know what Romney thinks about the governor's future.
First Mitch in your guess?
Wherever he'd like to be.
Yeah,
he's been all over. I mean, he's obviously been at that level already. So it's, the guy should be the chief operating officer of the government, which is their chief of staff. But Mitch is such an extraordinarily capable guy. Whoever our nominee is, if we elect a Republican president, they or I will become a leader.
Some of that's difficult to understand. What Romney said was, if we elect a Republican president, they or I will be coming to his door. And Delaney, is that anything more than pandering?
No, I mean, I'm sure that he'd be a candidate for something. I didn't hear vice president mentioned in that. That could be a function of the fact that he was courting the governor of New Jersey basically as Romney was here. I assumed encouraging him to get into the race, which probably doesn't endear him to Romney, but you know, I'm sure there'd be a role for him in the administration, but I didn't hear VP mentioned unless, you know, the audio was bad. Maybe I missed it.
Chris Christie's not getting in the race, by the way. He did suggest maybe chief of staff.
Chris Christie has not ruled out getting in the race, and there's going to be an announcement Monday.
Really?
You heard it here first on Indiana Week in Review.
All right.
I won't be surprised if he doesn't get in the race.
But having said all that, I'm not making news for Governor Christie because I don't know, but I did hear he say he was going to make an announcement on Monday of some kind. Mitch Daniels will be considered for vice president by some of these folks, no question about it. But this was some major sucking up here. I mean, it was amazing. Yeah. And I don't blame him. I'd do the same thing if somebody asked me that if I came to the state capital of a potential candidate like that. And so he did what he had to do, but I think he meant it. I think he thinks that if he would become a candidate for president, he would make it possible for Mitch Daniels to do about anything he wanted to.
Romney also managed to mention right-to-work legislation on his visit here. That seemed like that was necessary.
Well, you know, the right-to-work legislation is not, not all Republicans feel the same about right-to-work legislation, so I'm not sure that is necessarily the best thing to mention when you're in Indiana, but, you know, I mean, there are plenty of supporters up for it out there, so it's not a total surprise.
Finally.
How's that for all over the place? It was.
veterans from World War II were honored at an event called the Indianapolis Roundtable this week. It's an organization by and for those veterans. The special guest was former Indiana Governor Edgar Whitcomb, now 93. He was a prisoner of war and wrote a book about his capture called Escape from Corregidor.
I was held captive for about 15 days, and then I escaped. And then I was recaptured and interned in for about 17 months. and not able to communicate with my family, not able to do anything.
Mike McDaniel, what a guy.
He is a great guy and a fascinating life. And the book is actually pretty good. If you've not read it, you should. It's quite a story. And he looks great. I'm glad to see him in such good health.
It's Channel 20 did a documentary on him not too long ago, and I think he's a guy who, after he left the governor's office, didn't seek the spotlight.
No, but he's had an amazing life, and he does look wonderful. Mm-hmm. 93 years old, and he looks absolutely terrific. So that's wonderful.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of Franklin College, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.